I have seen one or two things in my life, but never, never anything like this.
Maybe did a bad, bad thing. 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 You ever loved someone so much you thought your little heart was gonna break in two? I didn't think so. You ever tried with all your heart and soul to get your lover back to you? I wanna hope so. You ever pray with all your heart and soul just to watch you walk away? Maybe did a bad, bad thing. Maybe did a bad, bad thing.
Come with us now, if you dare, down a rickety staircase into a dank, dark basement. What awaits? The Saturday Night Freak Show.
Welcome back, ladies and germs, to the Saturday Night Freak Show podcast. It happens every Saturday right here on your radio dial, wherever you're getting your internet radio from. I'm your host, Colin. I'm surrounded by internet radio superstars, including
Travis,
Chris,
Gary.
And welcome back, Chris, for your second
Saturday Night Freak Show.
Thank you.
Light up.
I'm excited. I'm excited.
The Saturday Night Freak Show All-Stars? Yeah, I don't know. So this week, it was my pick, and it's Christmas week, I think, by the time you're listening to this.
Oh, you chose the one, too.
Best Christmas movie
Christmas
ever.
Like
this film.
Eyes Wide Shut. Stanley Kubrick's
final
movie. I want
to fuck everyone but you.
1999.
Merry Christmas, baby.
Yeah. So, Eyes Wide Shut. Okay, so here's... Stanley Kubrick, it always seems like his movies go, like, a period where they come out and nobody likes them, and then, like, they get critically reappraised years down the line.
You need 15 years to go by. There's like, it's a classic, because it's an old movie by Kubrick. As long as it's not a new one.
Okay, so here's a question
as long
for
it's
you.
Older.
Because Stanley Kubrick is always regarded as, like, he's a genius, or he's, like, a great... Okay,
such a
so...
genius.
Why do you think people attribute that to him?
Because they don't understand good photography. So they see a good photographer and they're just like, this fucking guy is a genius.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, but what about this? No. Did you see what that looked like? It was genius. It's like, yeah, I get that. But wasn't it a little long? Oh, but it looked fucking beautiful. I was like, okay.
Yeah, that's like I heard it said about Kubrick is, well, you know, every frame is a masterpiece painted by him. I felt like I had time for him to paint them on my fucking eyeballs as long as this movie was, for Christ's sake. But yeah, it could have been shortened, but I did like the visuals. I really did. This is the first time I've actually made it through the whole film. So that's saying something.
Yeah, I
think there's something he said for the cojones that he has to go ahead and pace it in that way. And I think sometimes we often mistake boldness for genius.
Yeah, right.
But I'm not sure. I'm not a Kubrick. Woohoo!
Yeah,
he's a god.
Really,
oh my god!
Yeah,
I totally am. I'm totally in that court. Well, I mean, but it's primarily the stuff like post like Lolita. So like Dr. Strangelove on up, you know, are the and stuff that I like
except for my favorite.
Well, what did he have before?
I mean, Full Metal Jacket. I'm just saying it's not like one of my,
right,
you know,
right.
But
didn't he only do like Ben Hur?
No, Spartacus. Spartacus.
Well, Spartacus.
The Killing, Killer's Kiss, Paths of Glory, I think was like the big one.
Prior to Spartacus.
Spartacus, Lolita. Wow. And then I believe, unless I'm missing something, then it was Doctor Strangelove.
Yep. Then all the ones you would know.
2001 Space Odyssey.
Yep. And then Clockwork Orange,
Shining,
Barry
Metal.
Lyndon,
yeah.
And Full Metal Jacket, The Shining, and Out of Order.
I always walk away from a Kubrick movie like, I kind of know what he's saying to me, but I'm also like, he's leaving shit just out there, like hanging it out there like...
Well, that I got a whole new clarity on this movie watching it this time. I have a whole new take on this movie.
That happens when you stay awake.
It was like Prozac to me. Now I've got a whole new take on it because I actually watched the whole thing and I caught some of the messages I didn't catch before.
Right, so here's a question for you, because when I saw this, I saw it in 1999. I can't remember how old I was, but it's obviously like almost 20 years ago, right?
Right.
So I was significantly younger. I was married.
15.
But
by the math 15
this?
Years
Hold
ago.
Yeah,
if we're rounding up to 20, please
1999,
no.
1999. I wasn't quite.
Right. So, you know, I mean,
I was like, boobs! I like this movie.
I think I got married in 1990. So I was just married, right? Mm. So there's stuff now that has a different route.
Oh, sure.
As being married, you know, where you're sitting there like, I've had conversations similar to those where you're like,
yeah,
what the fuck are we arguing about? Right. You know?
Well, that's because we've been married long enough to know you don't tap dance in that minefield, but he was doing
exactly,
it.
Exactly.
And there's times, like we were talking about during the movie, you ask questions that you really don't want the answers to. And unfortunately, she was willing to share. So,
their big problem is they shouldn't flirt so openly in front of each other at a party. I mean, that's their one problem. It's like, okay, it's not even about smoking pot and talking about it. It's like, how about you guys just don't flirt openly in front of each other at a fucking party? Because that's all they could do is look at each other and like.
Well they were a little bit tipsy.
Okay. Well, but Nicole Kidman, it was like I said, like she laced her pot with sodium pentothal. It was like true serum.
She was paranoid.
She was letting it off. But she did it in such a cruel way.
Mm.
Well, because she
was. It was intentional, right?
Yes.
Because they go to this party, they flirt with. He flirts with these two models.
Like models.
Yeah. She gets hit on by
some
this
like fancy Hungarian.
By a Bond yeah. villain. Yep. That's who she gets hit on.
I was expecting him to be the leader of the Illuminati, like, fuck group at the end. Like, it's just me, the Hungarian.
Don't talk about Fuck Club.
How do we know that he wasn't there?
I'm thinking he was. Like,
but, you know, it's like, so they get sexually propositioned at this party. They're like, he's a doctor and she's a former art gallery
owner. Which means she's a doctor's
wife. Which means she's unemployed.
She's married to a doctor.
And they go to this, they know this guy who's like super rich.
They're wealthy. Yeah. You know, Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman are wealthy.
But this guy is
uber wealthy. This guy's Mitt Romney wealthy.
This guy's super elite dude. Yeah. Ziegler.
This is
Ziegler.
Ziegler and Hungarian Ziegler. Guy.
And he just looks like one of those swarthy business types. He really does.
Who, Ziegler?
To me. Yeah.
Ziegler or the Hungarian?
Ziegler's like the total like Jewish looking guy.
That's what I mean. That's what I'm saying. That's what I picture those guys as. They're the ones behind the scenes. It's not the dashing guys
the glasses, everybody in a Woody Allen movie. That's like every actor that's been in a Woody Allen movie.
Speaking of the Woody Allen element, this could have been a Woody Allen film.
Yeah,
I mean, you replace some of the neurotic New Yorkers about and talking about their sex life the entire time. Yeah, that is a Woody Allen movie on paper.
Like, except the Woody Allen character would be talking to himself.
Well, give Tom Cruise a running commentary about how crazy he is instead of just brooding, walking, and you've got
a Woody Allen movie. The characters would
eyes wide shut and on the East Side.
They would realize their feelings and say, "This is worth investigating," so they would actually take the leap and go like outside of the marriage and divorce and get remarried. I mean, a Woody Allen movie will take place over 4 years of the whole like I got divorced, got remarried. I realized that my new young
I just don't connect with my new young wife.
My new young Asian wife because we were of an appropriate age and you know this is all about the whole like you know well the weird thing is he's just like oh yeah I want to fuck ya and she. What she's like is
Wait,
that the only reason the reason why they even start talking about the whole her fantasies is because she's kind of like
she was jealous.
So just because I'm a woman means I wouldn't want to just fuck some because they get into the conversation of like who are you talking to? Well, I was talking to these two models. I was talking to a Hungarian guy. Oh, you know, did they want to fuck you? And
He's okay with the idea that, like, oh, he just wants to fuck my wife. Men, he likes that because like, he owns the hot woman.
And he's like, men are just like that. And she gets all like, women are like that? You just think that, like, she just gets on this, like, weird power trip about, like, how women can also be this sexual creature.
I can want penis, too. Yeah.
Well,
but he was in the Kobayashi Maru right there because that was the no-win scenario.
Absolutely.
He could not win that.
She was, like, downright loopy. She didn't smoke weed. She took a fucking Valium or something like that because she was loopy. Like I said, I don't like Nicole Kidman, so I don't know if it was just her acting that was just like, this is crazy. I don't think she's ever smoked pot.
That's one thing I want to point out for the listeners.
She probably would have been a lot more mellow.
So Eyes Wide Shut, it holds the Guinness World Record for being the longest film shoot of all time. It was 400 days.
They
shot this. So, I mean, and Kubrick being a meticulous, you know, quote-unquote filmmaker, which is where we come back to the
genius thing, just to make sure that, like, every red doors, the sex door. I mean, it's like...
No, apparently what he did, like, his method of working, like, he'd work out a script and then, like, go on set and be like, you know, it's like you plan and you plan and you plan for this moment, and then you have to rush through this moment. It's like, why can't we take our time here? Why can't we explore every single possibility? So he would make actors go to the past the point of, like, mental collapse.
What if
so
there you was
like
nothing pens? Left for them yeah, to change give. Your pens.
Yeah. And they would just kind of like, you know, then they'd start to do things that were either very honest or very weird or very loopy. I mean, famously, well, like,
yeah, Jack, they hit all three strides
Jack
on
Nicholson,
that one.
Like hitting the door, in The Shining, where he's like, I don't know how fennel puff. That was him exhausted at like take 65. He's like, I don't know what else to fucking do. I'm going to. And that's the one that they use. So whenever you look at a performance in a Kubrick movie, I think you have to keep in the back of your head, if you're gauging the act, not the character or whatever, what you see, but the acting, you have to realize that, like, these people did this, like, in some cases 95 times.
You know what?
This is the one he picked.
I don't know. My favorite Kubrick film has to be Dr. Strangelove, and I can't imagine George C. Scott or Peter Sellers putting up with that crap. I really can't.
Well, maybe, like, that wasn't him back then, though.
Yeah, no, that's why I think it's a better film.
Certain ones won't.
I think that's why it's a better film. You got somebody on set going, there's no way I'm doing that again.
Or you actually have time to, you have to rush through, and, like, you know, hey, man, you just go with the best thing. I've always liked the idea that a good film is just what you could get, you know? It's like, okay, you've got something in your head, but, like, what you can get is going to be something totally different than what you can edit out of that is going to be something totally different than both of those other things of what you were thinking about when you were shooting, what you were thinking about when you were thinking about it.
I think that has to be super hard on an actor, because an actor, like, has to sit there and go, like, they're trying to calibrate a performance, right? They're trying to find a performance so they can bring something. But if you're giving a guy, like, 65 different versions of this performance without knowing what he's going to use, I mean, that's weird, right? I mean, it has to be, like, a psychological pressure on the, and, like, that just puts them in a place where they're like, I have no idea what the fuck I'm doing. I don't know what this movie is going to look like. I'm totally in the hands of the director, which is maybe, like, his point, to make them completely subservient.
Well, did Kubrick gets his best stuff?
Did Kubrick edit his own things, or did he leave that to somebody else? Because I think that would be an interesting question to ask. Because if he's going through 65 takes,
well, I know he writes a lot of his stuff. Did he write this one as well?
Co-wrote.
I think
well,
so.
It's based on a novel written in turn of the century Vienna, or set in turn of the century Vienna, called Traumneville, which I guess translates to dream story. And the guy who wrote it, it's a guy named Arthur Schnitzler, and he apparently was a devotee of Freud. So it's a sexual
Freudianism.
That makes sense.
Like, it's almost like dream analysis, right? Like, the whole thing plays out kind of like an unconscious or subconscious.
Well, see, and that's what I think Cruise is dealing with his character, because we've already explained to the point where they went to the party, they were flirting with one another, then she's smoking pot, but like Travis said, there was more to it than that, because she just got real weird.
But, I mean, I don't know if they were trying to make her a fucking, like, I mean, because obviously...
A neurotic?
Yeah, if she's just this fucking weird...
Well, so then she goes into this whole story about how this one Navy officer, you know, she was willing to give everything up if she could have just spent the one night with him.
For a chance acquaintance. Yeah. It wasn't even
that's fucked up, though, because that, to me, that's not sex. That's like, I'm going to...
That's lust.
Leave you. Yeah. I'm going to completely drop you
and
out of my life
just
for this one
problem.
Thing, you know, where it's just like, is that, that's not just sex, that's like, oh, I would, like, despite my feelings of you, I would have fucking dropped your ass. That's like,
well, see, that's the other thing too, is like you just said earlier with her getting all offended, like, oh, women can't just have sex. No, because their feelings get involved. Men, like the old saying says, is women need a reason, men need a place. You know, because that's about the gist of it.
Well, they pretty much bring that up in the movie, too, that, like, you know, that's why she's offended. She's offended by the fact that he's not jealous of the fact that this other guy wanted to fuck his wife.
But see, I think he's dealing with the fact that he is jealous, but he's also kind of turned on by it, too. Because he keeps going into very detailed flashbacks. This is more than what she told him. This is him going through it in his mind, And it's, I'm sorry, but somebody involved with this story is in a cuckolded relationship, because that's just this whole story.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, because he does get into, like, when he goes to the elite party, I mean, the whole watching people. I don't know, maybe.
There's a voyeur element, I'm sure.
You get
yeah.
the idea that this guy is, like, I don't know, maybe not repressed is the wrong word.
Repressed?
But
nah, probably, yeah.
He's very, like, sexually repressed. But this movie... He keeps on bringing up, like, whenever it's like, well, you know, because she's like, when you're, you know, examining a woman and her titties are out, blah, blah, blah. What are you thinking right then? He's like, I'm a doctor, and as a doctor, I don't think about it, you know, this kind of stuff. And he keeps on using
like she wants him to,
like, I've master. She wants him to admit his dark cold in that way. In their,
well, yeah,
in
I think you have to be have clinical. Because, right? Like, yeah, I said, most of that shit would probably be orangutan.
The part where she traps him, like, the part where she traps him
on a nail.
Yeah.
She traps him right after that, because she's like, okay. But what do you think that this hypothetical woman thinks? Does she think about, like, what's going on with Dr. Bill?
Yeah.
And it's like, at that point, like, he cannot answer that question.
Yeah, but
he
does. Like,
well, he would be going inside the mind of a woman, and how could that be?
How could it be his fault if she's turned on?
Right, yeah, exactly.
Like,
that's the answer. Yeah.
That's not even his fucking, like,
poor business. Old Bill stumble fucks his way through this, right. And finally she's
his best bet would be, I'm going to bed. I'm going to watch the game. I'm going to,
at that point, I'm hearing Ed
play my PS4 now.
Well, maybe she's too fucking hot for his ass. You know, maybe he's just like, I don't want to ride the boat, man, because I got this beautiful wife, dude. She's like talking about, like, fucking people. Like,
yeah. Well, but see, and she was more obsessed with that part of it. I think she got off on the cruelty of what she was doing to him mentally. I think she was getting off on that.
Oh, I think she was a bit insecure and wanted to prove that she could make him jealous. Yep. And that would give her some sort of,
I get that,
feeling of self-esteem. If she could prove to him that he could be jealous,
it is though,
then then he could prove that he loved her.
It
in
is
a way.
Though a little right. weird though. Like, I can totally see that, but with the dream scene later, then it's like, I don't know about that, because now she does seem fucked up. And she's like, my dream! Yep. I fucked everybody and I was laughing at you!
That's what I'm saying.
Like, thanks a lot.
That's that whole subculture of these guys that want their wives to have sex with other men and humiliate them and put them into subservient roles. That's what I'm saying. Somebody involved with this movie is into that lifestyle. That's all I'm saying. Could,
but, like, I don't know.
But I think that's why that dream is one of the reasons why that dream is important, because the second one, when that dream sort of becomes, I guess, real in her mind, like, I could be sleeping around on you and that would shame you.
Was she like,
she feels really bad about,
like,
that.
It was a cuckold
when she wakes
thing.
Up,
that's
not not necessarily in the yeah. moment, but when she realizes what's going on in the real world, because, she feels really bad about
but
that.
But does she really feel bad, or does she just feel bad because she thinks he would feel bad about it? You know how
yeah, because right there, in that scene that you're talking about, because she's like embracing him like she really loves him,
but that's the honesty that Kubrick is playing with. That's why the eyes wide shut theme is, do you really want the truth about your marriage?
Yeah,
she's telling him the truth. Well,
is that to make him jealous at that point? That's
no,
what I'm
no,
saying.
No, I don't
that,
think so.
That's a, what that's the not, fuck's her
maybe?
Purpose
Maybe? I don't know. I don't.
She, but every time, it's like in the movie, they set her up that she's more honest than him. I got the impression, you know, a lot of times, either because he's repressed, reserved, or just basically wearing, you know, some kind of... metaphorically
speaking,
when he goes to visit the prostitute, I think it's kind of interesting because, you know, she's like, you know, well, what do you want to do? And he's like,
what's your specialty?
What do you recommend?
What do you recommend?
He was boyish. He was like smiling and laughing. He was real boyish. He was so far out of his depth,
he doesn't know how to, like, say, you know, I want this or that or the other thing. He's like, what do you want? So,
I didn't take it like that, because we actually had a conversation before the movie about that scene. So I was watching that scene. I was like, I don't necessarily take it like he was, like, very, like, I don't know what to say. He was just really traipsing into this, like, okay, sex with a girl. That's what it seemed like to me. It seemed really just like, because this guy is just traipsing into a fantasy, right? He heard his wife's fantasies, and he's like, the only way I can cope with this is to, like,
Avenge
myself.
Somehow starts seeing everything in a sexual manner, and that's why he goes out in the night, and everything people say to him is sexual. I mean,
everybody else in the rest of the movie wants to have sex with him.
Even the really mean, like, what were they, Boston guys? I don't even know. They wanted to be penetrated. So real meat here. I mean, really weird. That it's like, and it's another thing. Yeah, it's like,
well he plays several roles. Throughout the whole, I think all of it is maybe self-perception of him or just different views of him within, you know, he plays the doctor kind of savior, I'm going to come in and save your ass guy. He also plays kind of a comforter to the girl who just lost her father. And then he plays you're wealthy, so you must be gay guy on the street.
Then he kind of plays a hero to the
Lolita Lily Sobieski, and then he plays voyeur later. It's like all these different sexual roles that each time he puts on, like, each scenario, if you will, is a different sexual role until he puts on the mask. I'm sorry.
What I'm trying to get, like, going back to the first thing about the gay guy. So what's that about? Is that about people seeing him as a sexual thing, or is that supposed to be a commentary on him now seeing everything as a sexual thing directed towards him? I mean, is it because he's thinking about things sexually that everything people say is sexual, or is he just starting to, like, you know?
I'll tell you what. The first time that I saw it, the impression that I had was that, you know, because he, after this, okay, so after this admission from his wife, he gets a phone call. So, like, if they would have worked it out right then, this would have been a whole different movie. But it's unfinished business, psychologically. So he gets a phone call, has to go see this other woman, and then after, and she, you know, tries to, admits that she's in love with him, and, like, he can have sex with her right there. But then he gets called away from
that. Which we were talking about is like Nicole Kidman's like situation. Like, this woman's in Nicole Kidman's situation where she's got a boyfriend and she's like, I can fucking leave him and fucking, I love you, I love you.
It's
like
the same exact story.
And he's like, you don't know me. Yeah. We don't know, and that's what he doesn't see about the situation.
It's the role reversal.
He doesn't see, like, that's his wife's fantasy. You know, he's like living vicariously through his wife's fantasy.
I think that's why he is freaked out, because he does see it. I think he sees it and he's like, oh, wow.
But he doesn't see that his logic to her is, how can you love? You don't even, why would you give up everything? You don't even fucking know me. Where his wife, Nicole, we don't even know if Nicole Kidman sees that. All we know is that she was like, if he would have said something, I would have left. Thank God he was gone the next day.
Yeah.
So we don't
know. That's the thing that saved it.
Yeah. So we don't know if necessarily if, like, Nicole Kidman's fantasy would have been a true thing, or if it would have been like, I love you, but she don't even fucking know this guy, you know? So just the idea that he's in the same situation where he could have
seen... He's just on the flip side of it.
He's on the flip side of it, where he's the fucking, like, what the fuck?
But he doesn't get, like, any insight out of that. It doesn't seem like he's not aware of the fact that he's on the... Yeah, this is happening. Well, he's on the flip of his wife.
But the thing that bothers me about that,
I think he realizes she's right in that moment. I just don't think I still think he wants to go get revenge sex.
Well, my thing is that whole thing.
I think so. I don't know.
At the end of that argument, where she goes, "Well, our love was never truer." Blah 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 blah. That to me is like, okay. So you're saying if our love was never truer, but you're still going to go sleep with this guy? It just made no sense to me, that whole argument she was trying to lay out. She just seemed like a.
It's just that women. It's just that women.
I think it's when it's when love changes, you know, as I think it does, like, in just long-term relationships. There's like that, the hot, passionate, you know, era at the beginning that eventually gives way to, like, a more
comfort,
you know, caring.
Level.
Yeah. And so I think that's what she's trying to articulate in that moment, where she's like, my love for you is, you know, both tender and sad, you know, which is not awesome to hear. But, you know, I think it's like she's on the other side of that. It's like, these are the things that I'd be giving up. And, like, I do actually have a deeper kind of love for you.
Yeah.
I want to get back really quick to 2 points. Number one, Marion, the woman's that's trying to, you know, is in love with him. Her boyfriend is like the doppelganger for Dr. Bill, I think, like the guy who comes in from Dharma and
Greg. Dharma and Greg, Dharma and Greg.
He's the uninformed couple.
Greg.
He's the Dr. Bill of that situation. And two, we're talking about those guys who accost him on the street. The first time that I saw it, I did see it as like, you know, every single character. I mean, aside from, like, I think Ziegler and there's who else? Like, the people who don't treat Tom Cruise as, like, oh, Tom Cruise, you know, whatever.
A sexual...
You're a doctor. I must respect
kind of
you.
Sexual way. Like, so the whatever, the party guys or whatever, like, misinterpret somehow. And they're like, yeah, you faggot.
I took it as he's kind of walking well-dressed at night. I didn't know if it was supposed to be Greenwich Village or whatever.
Yeah, so maybe he could be, like, in the wrong neighborhood the wrong time. But this time watching it, I was thinking, like, he's just come from, like, so his wife, basically, in her attempt to make him jealous, emasculates him.
Right? Yeah, emasculates him.
Then exactly he goes to see Marion, and she's like, I love you. I love, you know, it's like, you know, so she basically wants to have sex with him right there, right next to her dead father.
Oh, yeah, right? Oh, my God, that's weird. How I would do it.
But, so he's like...
That's the ultimate revenge for a daughter.
Like, you know, there's love and stuff involved in this, and, like, you know, this is not the kind of thing.
Well, on one side, it's mistaken love. It's a fantasy love.
Yeah. So he leaves there, and he has the fantasy in his mind again. He's seeing what his wife's dreaming.
With Dennis Leary, I don't know who it is.
Yeah, it was Dennis Leary. Or Aaron Eckhart, we didn't figure it out.
Aaron Eckhart,
but that's when those guys appear. So I think the timing of those guys showing up further emasculate him into a point where he's like,
and I guess that would that would make a little bit more sense when he goes to the prostitute and acts like a sheepish boy. I guess if you're playing into that theory, because now he's afraid.
He was a little boy.
Now he's like, oh, I don't know what to do.
I never did this before.
What are boobies? You know.
Well, and like you said, the one thing when he gets the prostitute, the girl, right after that, right?
Yeah, I think if I remember correctly, he does.
The girl whose father had just passed away. It's that caregiver. That's a lot of women.
Another role, yeah.
And men, I guess, too, fall in love with their physicians because that's a caretaker, someone that cares for them, takes care of them, and they develop in their mind a relationship that's not there.
Right.
So I could see that part of it. But again, I think he took into consideration that he would have been doing the same thing, like you said, to that guy, that his wife was going to do to him.
Mm. Yeah.
And so he found that repulsive.
I don't think he thought about it.
I don't know. I'm not sure.
Because he said you're with him. Why would you give all that up?
I don't even think he thought about it. I think he's putting himself in Greg's shoes, like, oh, he's now in the situation of fucking airplane pilot Mike Dexter or whatever the fuck. I think it proves
that Nicole Kidman was right in that your patients think this about you.
And here, the first patient he goes to is thinking about that. You know, I don't know.
He never had the chance to explore the fantasy himself because he didn't even think about, oh, my shit, I'm filling up women. What if I made a move?
Exactly.
What if I thought of this sexually?
Yeah, what if I exploited this moment of weakness that they're having, this emotional breakdown?
Awesome.
Right. So after this, I want to say... This is when he runs into his old pal Nick Nightingale, the pianist from Ziegler's Party.
Well, I guess we kind of talked about the hooker. Yeah, okay. Big red door. It's all artsy, right? Everything with sex is a red door.
And I don't know. I've never been to a prostitute, but I can't imagine one in New York is going to cost you $150.
It was the early 90s. Or no, late.
It was 99.
Well, there's ones that cost you that. They just don't look like that.
That's what it is. I'm sorry.
It's the ones that smile at you and it looks like their tongue is in jail. That's the one she was working on. I thought, when you said 150 bucks, I'm like, is that for a lap dance? She was working on the HIV positive. That's true.
I didn't put that. Yeah, you're right.
She had a clearance. Yeah. She had a clearance, it was foreshadowing. Like, blood test clearance.
Foreshadowing going on there. I didn't even think about that.
It's kind of, they don't make that a point in the movie whatsoever, but it makes sense. She's waiting on this fucking blood. She knows there might be something going on. I got to make some money and get out of town.
She has no personal attachment.
Everybody at all. Don't go to a hooker.
All right, but this is the thing. Like we don't actually find this out.
You don't know this.
Because there's the build up to the center of the movie, and then the come down, which he revisits. Where he revisits like all of these places where he's been in the night. So like the nighttime is like this kind of journey.
For making love.
The rainbow.
Right. So at that
point, rainbow, which is where the fantasy is.
The rainbow. The dream. Yeah, the promise.
That's where we didn't talk about the rainbow ends when daylight.
The two models saying that where we go, when he's like, where are we going? And she's like, where the rainbow ends.
Where the rainbow
ends. Exactly, the rainbow.
Not over the rainbow.
Oz, you know, the fantasy world after that.
Well,
he's in his own head.
There's another thing there, too. Like, I don't know, like, you know, Nicole Kidman's character's name is Alice. So there's another
Wonderland. Yeah. There's a Wonderland theme in there.
Crazy. Yeah. She's down the fucking rabbit hole.
Yeah.
And his name is Bill, and he throws out a lot of money.
Into mirrors.
Maybe.
She's a whore.
Oh, did you know? Anecdote. His name is Bill Harford because apparently the original character in the book is Fridolin. too Jewish for Stanley Kubrick, who is Jewish, but he said he wanted to bleach all that out, wanted like completely American types.
Like Ziegler.
Like Harrison Ford.
Like Ziegler.
Harford. Harrison Ford.
Ah, Harrison Ford. That's where the name came from. That's very interesting.
Okay,
Bill Harrison Ford.
This is where the movie takes like a total fucking like, we were talking about fantasy, right? And then all of a sudden,
it goes into
like a weird world of like, what? And I think it starts to become about what's fantasy. Well, I think it starts to become about what's accessible to you. Well, you know, that's what to me the rest of this movie power. About sex and power. Yeah. What's accessible to you? Like the fantasies you will fulfill depending on your station in life, because like you said, he at the party of Ziegler, the Jewish elite buddy of his. We don't really know what this guy does. Accountant? I don't know. We don't know what his role is in these people's lives. We know that they don't know any of their friends.
He's not a doctor because he can't figure out his prostitute is overdosing.
Well, Nicole Kidman even says to Tom Cruise, "Why does he invite us?"
So what is he? He might be an accountant.
That's what you get for being. Doing house calls, so he might
be an accountant.
He's Tom Cruise is his personal physician, but we don't know what he does.
Okay, I guess that's all we need to know is it's his personal.
Right, yeah. He could be a stockbroker.
There's a piano player, Nick Nightingale. Hello, lady.
That's a jazzy name.
He changed his name to Nick Nightingale.
He did.
After leaving medical.
That is a superhero name if I've ever heard one.
He took the rest of his tuition on medical school and spent it on changing his name.
And playing piano.
So Tom Cruise is like, I know that guy, man. That guy went to college school with me. Another thing about fantasy, right? Like just fucking blowing off the direction you were going in and choosing a different direction. But Nick Nightingale fucking did it. Nick Nightingale's like, fuck this fucking medical school. I'm going to become a fucking pianist for an awesome, like, crazy sex elite orgy.
Because I'll have groupies that come to
when we were watching
weird
movie,
shows. Yeah,
you pointed out something.
At hotel lobbies.
Nightingale's like, you know, like... What was it? You said something about like the way that he addressed like his gigs and stuff like that.
His gigs were kind of could be paralleled to Tom Cruise's wishes as far as fantasies. I'm in a different city every night. I don't know where I'm going to play. I don't know where I'm going to be tonight. I don't know who I'm going to be playing with tonight.
But he's got his wife sort of, safe at home.
But my wife is safe at home with the kids. So I can have this normal life when I go home.
Baby.
But then you know, if we parallel that with Tom Cruise's journey, I can have these sexual escapades night after night after night in a different place, a different time. I don't know who, I don't know when, I don't know where.
Well, but he doesn't say sexual escapades.
He doesn't. But I'm just saying, he's like, oh yeah, I'm everywhere, like all over the world. I'm Nick Nightingale, of course.
Like, I don't know why I get that.
I don't know, because the waitress knows where he stays. At the cafe next door.
Yes.
Plus, did you see the rest of the band Nick plays with? He's the hot guy in the band. Because the rest of them are all geriatric. So, yeah, he's...
We might be grasping at straws here. So Nick Nightingale's like, hey, man, I got to go to this gig in about an hour. I got another one tonight.
Yeah, and there's like another lady tonight. Oh, kind of what really Tom quick, Cruise really, kind of is thinking. Oh, another lady. Sweet.
That's so fucking cool, man.
Yeah, there's no way you're going without me.
He didn't have sex with the prostitute because his wife calls. That's why he ends up...
Oh, yeah, you're talking about the phone.
They do have a herp kiss. So that's going to be a conversation for Eyes Wide Shut, too. What the fuck is this?
And then,
I kissed a hooker.
Yeah. Colin was brought up the point that the phone is the ultimate cock block in this movie.
Yeah, this is
like every time he's about to get some phone.
Or
someone who sounds like a phone. I'll be hard to manage.
Something that
like
interrupts the fantasy. It's just something that interrupts the fantasy. Yeah. Something he's like, I'm gonna fucking go for it.
Saved by the Bell.
It still contributes to that idea of like the whole story in some way. And maybe it's because I know that it's based on a movie called Dream or a story called Dream Novel. Dream. It feels like a dream story. You know, I mean, it's contributed to by the editing where there's a lot of dissolves. You know, which kind of like parallel dreams, at least to me. That you know, you kind of dissolve from one moment to the next. But it's like it adds to that kind of like...
No way, Wayne, what do we do?
It's like he's being woken up continually from these dream moments, like when he can actually have, you know, it's like...
His tether to the real world.
Well, I don't think he didn't even kiss that hooker, Domino.
No, he kissed her.
Did he kiss her?
He kissed her.
Okay, so now the second movie can be called Eyes Wide Shut, Lips Scabbed Over. Yeah, that'll be the second movie.
If you can get Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman in the same room.
She goes out of town like this motherfucker.
Yeah. No.
So he's like, yeah, man, I got this crazy fucking gig. Dude, it's so weird. They call me only an hour before the gig. It's in a different place every Saturday. I play blindfolded.
And the secret password is Fidelio, which has no symbol whatsoever. Sounds exactly like fidelity.
We have to look at, is that
I have no idea why you would think you'd want to cheat on your wife.
Is that Latin? Fidelio?
Fidelio. It sounds Italian.
It sounds Latin.
I thought it was a German opera, you thought he said.
Oh, shit. Maybe you're right. You said it's a German opera. But German opera, don't they use... Isn't all opera Latin?
I don't know. It sounds Italian. I'm sorry.
I don't know opera. I'm not an opera reviewer.
We don't know our languages like we should. I'm sorry, dude.
I'm not positive, but I'm going on. That's got to be infidelity. I'm just guessing.
Right, or fidelity. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so Fidelis, Fidelity, Fidelio.
Can someone camp Google Fidelio?
I can't.
Fidelio? Can you Google? Can Google Fidelio?
Sure. I guess.
What's the definition?
Fidelio.
Or where's the origin?
I'll continue talking as you guys Google Fidelio. So the dude, Tom Cruise, like, dude, you got to let me in here.
There's no way you're leaving here without bringing me with you.
It's like, there's no way, man. And he's like, well, just let me know where it's at. I'll show up on my own, give the password. He's like, cool, but you got it. Which I don't know. If he wears blindfolds, how do you know you got to wear a mask?
It was an opera by Ludwig von Beethoven. So I'm trying to get it.
What does the term mean?
The term Fidelio.
You go to like Adam Online.
Maybe Fidelio is not a term. Maybe it's just the name.
It could be. I'm guessing Adam Online will be able to get you some.
He said one time the blindfold slipped or it wasn't
on
so good. Yeah, he said it wasn't on so good, and he saw in the bill the women.
Oh my God, the women, Bill.
They have boobies.
Oh, and masks.
Boobies are nice.
Boobs on masks. So, and this is where. I don't know. This is where my mind, at least, my term of watching this fucking movie, this is where I was like, well, access. Access is fantasy, right?
Well, that
the fantasy, because yeah. Okay, I could sit here in my apartment and dream shit all day long. Not going to happen. As soon as you become a doctor, as soon as you actually start to enter the world of having power, money, because Nicole...
There's a lot of upward mobility desire.
Well, her character...
Class conflict in this.
Well, what's the difference between men and women? Men just want to fuck because they're lustful, and women only want support and security and da-da-da-da-da. But the rest of this movie does kind of treat women like all they want security, right? You got the whore. You got the whores that they only want secure. They only want money
or sex. Or drugs. There are a couple of them that want drugs.
They don't... Yeah, they're not about love. They're not... No women in this movie is about love. They are about security.
Or two Japanese men if you're 16.
That's a whole other thing.
But that's the thing. Yeah. Like, all of the encounters that he has, I think, like, it goes on, like, we're on a ramp downward toward the orgy, right? Which is where we're heading toward. But, like, all of the encounters seem to be stripping love completely out of the
Can I go back to the economy a little bit? I don't want to go like Marxist or anything, but there's a lot of the lady who lost her dad invites Tom Cruise over, and I'm dating a teacher now, but now I want a doctor. And then Nicole Kidman, I'm married to a doctor now, but now I want a rich Hungarian. It seems like there's a lot of upward mobility in the female desire.
You know,
and the male desire, it's like more kinky. It's like I don't have enough kink at home. Now I got to get kink from here. I got to have two models, not just Nicole Kidman. You know, it just seemed like each one were upping their ante in different ways.
That's actually been one of this is like a fucking kind of off topic, but with topic. That's actually been one of my favorite points of Clive Barker's The Hellbound Heart or Hellraiser. Idea that...
That's funny. I was thinking about that. I was thinking about this movie.
Yeah, once you seek out like power, riches, fantasy, and once you've done all that shit, it's like,
yeah.
I mean, it's always there's about doing the next.
And then the next, there is no next after a while.
Well, you become
either you can't get it or there is nothing next.
You become so. What would you say? Debauched.
Yeah, debauched. Yeah,
debauched.
Debauchery.
So you become sicker and sicker and sicker, and that's what this movie is. Like, I'll fuck this. Well, no, like I could fuck this chick that's my patient's daughter. I won't.
Right.
Oh, and then the hooker, and then the...
I could fuck the hooker, but I
get and the money, again, absolves a lot of that with the orgy. If you knew who they are, I'd have to kill you. Oh, my gosh, I'm not going to tell you who they are, but if you knew who they are. And then with the Russian saying, well, I was mad at these Japanese guys, but now that they paid me, I'm okay with them sleeping with my daughter.
Yeah, it seems like
money absolved a lot of that.
Power will corrupt those people. Power and, like, actually, like, I thought this was wrong because I've got these societal whatever, but once you have power and money involved, oh, all of a sudden things start to, like,
I mean, let's be honest. If we all chatted up Nicole Kidman in 1999 and we talked about art with her, there's no way. I mean, the reason she was into him is because he was a Hungarian billionaire. I mean, that's what was inferred.
Yeah,
was
he's that sophisticated that was older him? Guy.
Yeah, because he was not Brad Pitt.
Her. No, she had to pull herself awake. She's like,
she was mesmerized.
Yeah. She's like, I've got to leave or
attention. I mean, like, serious sexual attention.
Well, because she's trying to prove women are sexual creatures, not
and I think the money was an element of that.
I don't think she was trying to prove it.
Well, no, she's not trying to prove. I'm just saying, you know, the character herself is trying to. The character herself is trying to, like, kind of make a point of women could be sexual and not just worry about money.
I think at that point, maybe.
But in that moment, you're saying that's the argument that she makes later with Tom Cruise in the bedroom,
while the Hungarian is seducing her. I mean, she's taken by the fact that she
takes
be
the bait
a sexual
for a while.
Creature. She can be a sexual creature, which is her point later.
If he was a homeless man saying those same things, she would not be interested.
Well, that's true.
You know, that's my angle. She liked the fact that he had power and influence.
I mean, I get what you're saying, but it's like the whole time during that scene,
he has the ability.
It seems like, well, wait a second. It seems like it's the, it seems like this is just someone who will make her feel wanted, right? But she's sitting there going, you know, it's like, I'm married, I have a husband. It's like, but I'm, you know, it's like, he's like, but why would you want, you know, he's just trying to coax her into
why would you be married if you could have any man in the room?
But she repeatedly holds up that toes the line of like, look, I'm not
she had that moment of fucking weakness. No,
I'm jobless.
She kissed him when she was like,
no, she had that, but she had that moment of fucking weakness.
She thought about
I just can't because I'm getting trouble. It's not about hold on though. The thing about his eliteness is once again we're talking about if you have money and power, it makes it easier for your fantasy to come true. This guy's this rich Hungarian guy. She can easily leave this doctor and live her life with him. It would make her fantasy easier.
And it would probably be a better life for her daughter, in theory, if you are married to a millionaire versus a 100, couple hundred thousand heir.
Her daughter is the furthest thing.
Well, sure, sure.
Well, I mean, you got guys like Tony Randall, you know, married to a 28-year-old supermodel. Is she there because he's hot and sexy? I'm thinking not. You know,
I think the money. And the money plays a role again.
Two models want Tom Cruise. He's a doctor. It's the money. It's thing.
And the prostitute.
How money and power get you these things.
The girl with the dead dad. Everybody's trying to make that upward mobility.
Yeah, but okay.
I think it's about
the girl. The Lily Sobieski. You know, she's in it for money now. You know, I think a lot of that is
for some reason. Even though Nicole Kidman's character brings up that you think women can't be sexual, you think we are only for security, blah, blah, blah. I do think Stanley Kubrick wrote this movie to show women want the security from the powerful.
And notice, she's out of work. The character's out of work when they go to this party, and she goes out of her way to mention that. He's like, I know artists, I know sculptors. You want to come see my sculpture collection?
All of a sudden, you know?
Well, and I think that's an element of it, too.
Oh, wait, as counterpoint. So everything that you said may be absolutely correct. Yeah. I don't know, right? I mean, it's an interpretation, I suppose. But, like, it doesn't seem like those initial two encounters at the party where the models are approaching Tom Cruise and where the Hungarian is approaching Nicole Kidman are about mobility.
They ask him he does. The models ask him what he does.
Yeah.
He's like,
he's a doctor. That's his access card to that.
I mean, it's all about security. security.
But you don't think that that's. But all of this doesn't seem to be like. Well, I can't imagine
how often. How often does
those are like sex fantasy, right now? But, it's not about like what's going to happen tomorrow. It's like sex right now.
But that is attractive.
It all goes together. Sex, power, money. It all goes together. Those three things are so fucking intertwined. There is no separating. No. If you became a bum tomorrow, your fucking wife might leave you. I mean, that's just the way it is. I mean, so I think those things are very intertwined. I think this movie just touches on it. And it's not like drilling it in your head. I'm not saying like the purpose of this movie is to say women want security and that's it. Right. I'm just saying he goes out of his legs to show that as soon as he's going into this fantasy world for sex, the women only want the security money from it. The women aren't about just sex or whatever.
It's the total counterpoint to Nicole Kidman's argument.
Nicole's like, well, sometimes
that's what she
I like
wants.
That, but I want
you know, she wasn't
sex
some
too.
Woman at a sex party because she was a fucking hooker. You know?
Yeah. I get it.
So at the sex party. God damn, where are we?
Well, we went under the rainbow.
Rainbow.
Yeah, we went where the rainbow ended. And
you notice the costume, which I thought that was the one part I thought was funny. Because the character
was funny.
Yeah,
he's funny. He was just a Stanley funny Kubrick character. Not having a sense of humor, but like that scene is played for laughs, right?
Which one's that?
The Russian.
He's awesome because of Snatch.
You stay here, I call the cops. Or
gentlemen.
I will sell you a gun. Yes, I love that guy.
Yeah.
But the end of the rainbow is, you know, a rainbow is a collection of colors, and it, you know, the presence of all colors makes white. Well, the end of the rainbow should be all black if you think about it. And it's interesting that when the end of the rainbow happens, there are no more Christmas lights.
It's the orgy.
It's the orgy. There are no more Christmas lights.
The only place in the movie I want to say there's no Christmas
tree. Yeah. And there are no more Roy G. Biv, if you will.
Wait.
What, was there
the,
Christmas?
The guy with the red cloak, does he have a gold mask?
There's a
rainbow is a pot of gold, right? But,
no, it's just
it
the
seems like there are a lot less practical lights.
Somewhere over the rainbow.
Yeah.
The fantasy world.
He's just
the
Pope of Punani. That's
but well,
all
but once he sees...
it's going along with the dream thing.
Yeah, right. But once he sees the reality...
This is a dream. That's a dream. It's his own fantasy of what he's capable of doing.
But once he sees the reality of the dream... With the different lighting and everything, it like this is not necessarily something that I enjoy. I don't think he was getting off on watching all those people have sex in those rooms.
Walking like, away,
he wasn't. Yeah, you're right.
Walking away, he was. He almost didn't have time because they knew he was.
That's true.
Here comes the block. The woman talking through the mask, so she sounds like a phone, and she gets him away from all that.
But she's like, "You have to get out of here. It is dangerous.
Well, it's interesting.
A dangerous sex party.
When she leaves the little ritual circle, she goes directly to him,
dude,
right?
Guys,
and takes him aside.
Yeah, all the 12 girls or whatever. And
I
they
think
pick
Kubrick's
each
seen some shit. That's what I think. I think he's seen some shit. I think he's just like, you know, because, okay, personally.
I have to do what to get my next movie made?
I could be a conspiratorialist. I can be.
So say we all.
Yeah, so say we all.
Well, this movie does have some precedent
it's
in there.
It's the idea
you Google,
of sex. Okay, sex.
Eyes
Wide
Shut Illuminati. Hey,
sex
have a good
is
time.
An exchange of power. Sex is an exchange of power. Men, that's why. When you emasculate a man, you're taking power from him, you know? Yep. So that's why they think elite Satanist people, that's why they think sex is so important in their rituals, is because you are literally taking power, like life essence, somewhat, or whatever you want to fucking call it, through these acts. That's why they have these big fucking orgy things or whatever. And that's also why pedophilia is a big thing, is because the younger, the more innocent... You know, whatever. I don't know what. It's the just, better the soul. I don't get it.
They also do that whole emasculating sex thing in prison, too. So, you know,
because,
a whole
largely because of power. And I guess if you talk
power,
about
power, it's all, yeah.
A lot of sexual abuse is more about power than gratification.
Right. Yeah, gratification. Oh, yeah. That's why I like that this movie does touch on, like, I mean, I don't think this movie is like, it's not necessarily saying anything about the elite or whatever, but I think it at least touches on that.
I do.
Like, power, money, sex. All fucking one, like, and it goes all the way to the top. He's like, I like how that guy's like, if you knew the names of the people that are there,
right?
You would fucking,
well, that's what I'm
like,
saying. They were just missing the big owl. That's all I'm gonna say.
Oh yeah, they didn't give out like there wasn't pyramids or out. But see, that's what I'm saying. I think Kubrick's an anti Illuminati guy. He doesn't want to. The whole idea of putting owls.
That's why he died four days after this film was released.
It was 4 days after he showed it to the studio.
Oh, yes, and just like Bruce Lee.
Yeah, okay, but we also have to say the flip side of that. Kubrick was 70 years old and overweight, so, I mean, you can go either way.
Yeah, but I'm just saying that
that's no fun.
I'm just saying I like
you're ruining it. You're poking holes, man.
You know, I'm not saying that, well... Yeah, I just like how they threw in how sex is used in Illuminati ritual just elite power, how people view sex up there. Because it's almost like something that, it's almost like the idea, do you think that like gratifies them? They just like the power they have. They're dominating over other people at the party. There's a set of women.
People who don't have value aside from sexual gratification.
That's what Ziegler says.
Yes.
That doesn't mean they were hookers. You know,
unreliable
character.
The guy
maybe.
In the red, he goes
the
around.
Cardinal.
He does, yeah, the cardinal.
Yeah,
but anyway, yeah,
was there like ecstasy
he, like,
in
bangs
that stuff?
His thing, and then he's like
ecstasy smoke
and
or something.
He's got like the
incense burner.
The ecstasy incense.
I'm not gonna necessarily say Illuminati. It's an elite.
Yeah,
he doesn't name it.
No one's actually ever seen an Illuminati ritual, so we're assuming that this is what...
Have you never watched the Video Music Awards? Of course you have.
I did see...
I saw that Nicolas Cage movie.
Anybody?
What's that?
The Conspiracy?
Yeah.
There's a lot of the Conspiracy movie.
Oh, the movie.
That seems like they borrow heavily Eyes Wide Shut.
No, the Conspiracy took everything that was real and changed the name of it. That's all they did. The whole, like, the name of the club, the name of the thing, all they do is take
every...
Yeah,
but when they get to the club at the end, don't you think, like, it has, like, clearly those people have seen this movie? Like,
they've also, I mean, the whole movie is Alex Jones's Bohemian Grove video. But like I said, I don't want to get too into conspiracies, because I didn't think that this showed... I
thought it was more of a personal journey.
It showed a lot, though, because this whole movie's about, like, this is the fantasy of your wife, and this is, like...
Yeah,
you fucking broke into our elite party. You say anything, you disappear.
Yeah.
We've already made the other people you talk to disappear. I mean, this movie's like pretty heavy on the holy fuck. This guy got so into fantasy that it's like, dude, you're not ready for this fantasy yet.
Yeah,
you're not ready
for
how far deep the rabbit
hole goes.
Where
it's like it's dangerous, right? Well, that's the Alice in Wonderland reference again. Yeah, it's like it's you know. I mean, it just for a movie, it's like a cool idea, I think, for like the plot of a movie. Well, like he goes on this sexual journey down into this like underworld where he, you know, ends up at this orgy, which is, I mean, like I've heard it criticized as the world's most boring orgy. Yes, it's probably.
Yes, it is actually.
Yeah,
fuck,
but
I gotta say, damn.
Because
shit.
It's basically like, you know, guys in suits dancing with naked women. There was
like
a lot of like Helmut
thrusting.
Newton influence, I think, of his photography. Was like one of the things that Kubrick would send to the screenwriter. You know, it's like, okay, here, look at all these pictures of women in high heels and thongs and nothing else, and guys in tuxedos. And there's a lot of that, you know, in it. Oh, this was a scene also that, I don't know, it was after it was screened for these the executives at Warner Brothers, they said, in order to avoid an NC-17 rating, we have to digitally alter this movie and put these... Like,
put people in front.
Yeah,
yes.
Put people in front of all the thrusting, because thrusting is apparently the thing...
Thrusting's bad.
That gets you the NC-17. So
back then,
that's all been.
You know what? Actually, you know what? NC-17 comes from women getting pleasure.
What?
If you're in Britain,
I
guess that would be true nowadays with the censorship going on there.
Are you show having pleasure? Oh, that's NC-17.
That would explain Showgirls, a movie called Whore with Teresa Russell.
Yep,
the first one was Henry and June. Would show a woman having pleasure. Boom. You might be onto something. Okay.
No, that was in a movie. That was in a documentary called "This Film Is Not Yet Rated." It goes into that. Like, that's a good documentary about rating how unfair.
And that maybe goes back to what Nicole Kidman was talking about, where you know, why can't I just have plain sexual desire?
There was an Andrew Dice Clay concert thing that was rated NC-17.
Oh,
I think any human's getting pleasure. They'd rather see us
murdered.
Well, that's my own big conspiracy thing. We'll talk about that later.
Okay. Well, like you said, I mean, he's showing up to an orgy where it's not just, you know, the average orgy, which is your biggest danger is pulling the hamstring. This is where you can disappear. You've been somewhere you shouldn't have been. This isn't just, oh, my wife got pissed because I was having more fun with this girl than her. Mm-hmm. This is, now you've seen too much. We're going to have to kill you. All... Not only you, we're going to come after your family, too.
Well, I think that plays into the theme. It's like, well, this is my fantasy, but when people find out, I'm shamed. That's why the removing of the mask is a big deal. That,
they're going to make him strip naked
before
he left.
Yeah. And you know, the death that they were going to cause, like, you could be in big trouble if you start sleeping around with all these women when we don't want you to, could also be, if you want to extend that, to the hooker.
I think
because the next scene that he sees her, I have AIDS. You know,
putting your foot actually in a good pool. Idea that, like, if you do live out your
after, it's like sex if you, and then death
if
after.
If you do live out your
if you go down this rabbit hole of sexual gratification, you're going to die either literally, like, right tonight, or you're going to get an STD, or, you know.
Fantasies, you ultimately end up hiding who you really are because you're ashamed of your fantasies. You're not supposed to act on your fantasies.
That's all the roles he's playing earlier.
You're supposed to keep fantasies, you know. You're ashamed of who you... That's interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting.
Well, holy shit! We all have...
Now I feel ashamed.
Everyone wears a mask. Everyone has their things they keep to themselves. They don't tell everybody, you know.
Like, I don't think Kubrick's the biggest conspiratorial film director, but I just think a lot of his movies love to touch on a lot of
things. Like I said, somebody involved in the movie, and I didn't read the original story, but I'm saying involved with this movie is into that lifestyle because it's a present.
No, maybe they just, I don't know. To me, it's just the idea that you never truly know what someone else is thinking,
right.
No matter what.
I think
no matter how well you thought you can know that person, you think from top to bottom, but because people change.
Yeah, because that is the thing that, like, completely offends her is the fact that she's like, and you never worried at all. And he's like, no, I never worried.
I trust
you. Like, because you don't know what I'm doing. And like, because I know you. And that's what offends her. She's like, you are saying that you think you know me so well.
All of this stuff is out of the challenge.
And I don't know. I'm not trying to defend Nicole Kidman's character too much because I think she is a bit paranoid and maybe psychotic and to some degree. But that might be, I guess, in her defense, another way for him to control her. I know you, therefore you won't do this. Well, no, that's you trying to control me again because you think you know me. You know, I don't know.
It's possible he just needs that illusion or whatever he's constructed, the image of her, right? So he's built.
Yeah, that's it. Again, that male control. My image of you is you wouldn't do this. Well, not your image, it's me, you know?
As, you know, like, okay, so then I can compartmentalize my life and I can exist this way and I don't
have any sexual desire. But you're taught to trust people.
And she just comes in there with a fucking sledgehammer and blows that all up.
The only way to have, supposedly the only way to have a good relationship is to not have any jealousy, right? I mean, it's one of those things where you're taught to to curb and trust and like la 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 la.
Well, I think
it's kind of a double-edged sword in a weird way.
Because I think I was saying earlier, I think like it takes a little bit of that mystery to keep like a relationship, a long-term relationship alive.
You got to feel like there's something to lose. If you feel like this is a fucking, if this is in the bag,
if you knew everything about the other person, then that's the end of the fucking road.
They kind of
right?
become pathetic in a weird
way. Well, you got to,
they're a given.
That's like the old saying, you got to keep it spiced up. You got to, keep things interesting.
I mean, in the book.
Well, that's again when you're
sorry.
Oh, I'm glad I wasn't drinking when he said that.
It's in the Eyes Wide Shut podcast. It's all right.
What are you saying, Chris?
No. I think the honesty is definitely a strong element of this, but when they start being honest, they realize that there is a lot of danger in that.
Yeah, there's a lot.
But there's honesty, and then there's honesty.
But there's honesty,
too much honesty.
and then there's tact.
Yeah,
there's a difference. I don't need to know all the details of your fantasies. But if you felt like you were hit on and you were tempted, I'd like to know that because then we know, hey, that's a weird thing.
To me, she got a little bit of pleasure. Go ahead.
But I think she kind of got off on that because she wanted to make him jealous.
She emasculated him, and I think she got off on that.
And then it became, I'm going to one-up you, and you're going to one-up me, and it kind of went back and forth for a while. But I think the honesty is important. It's the tact and the respect that has to go with that honesty. Be like, yeah, I look at other women. That doesn't mean I'm going to go home with any of them. That doesn't mean I'm going to go out of my way to hit on them.
I think he was going to fuck those two, though. Come on. He would have.
You think?
Because
he was stabbing it.
No, he said to be continued.
He would have fucked them. He just had to get called off.
Yeah.
Because he's already part of it. He's already joining that elite. Yeah, he's always joining the elite where he's willing to impose on his family.
It's hard to say.
It does feel like I think Gary's got.
He's like, where are we going?
Damning evidence there is that because he's like, ladies, where are we going? It's like, I'm
yeah,
sorry,
he's trying to get out of it.
And he gets
politely
rescued by that cock block of the guy coming up.
Ziegler wants
up
you
to see Ziegler, yeah. But the best damning evidence. Maybe he's just being polite. We'll never know because he never comes back to the model.
Sure, sure. Pretty sure. Interesting when he said like, it.
To be oh, well, but who? What guy I wouldn't be on its face?
Let's face it. I mean, we're all men. He was got two beautiful women on your arm, and they're taking you, and you're thinking, oh my God, you know.
Yeah, but there's an honesty element of there. Yeah, they were attractive, and yeah, in another life, maybe.
No,
but I'm married, and it's not going to happen. You know, and I think that's the difference, and that's the you know you can be honest, and then you can be untactful.
No,
in your
but
honesty.
Look at this. But look at this movie. This
I think
whole
that's where Nicole Kidman was being
Nicole
very
Kidman
untactful in her honesty.
Yeah. Nicole Kidman's the honest one. She's too honest. She's the honest one. He's not.
She's painfully honest
behind masks.
Yeah.
He would have fucked us
because I think in that moment she was out to hurt him.
Repression, but he's repressed also. I think like he's like I just don't think about this. I'm married. I'm a doctor. I'm married. These are the roles that I fill as these, you know.
Because most repressed people are only repressed because the options weren't laid out there for them. That's usually why a lot of people are repressed.
But you don't think that, like, Bill had other, like, solicitations?
Not by two models.
You don't think?
No.
According to his wife, he did, because all the patients.
But no, she's just imagining patients. She's not, like, saying, because, I mean, that's totally irrational.
But look at our sample size here. The one patient we see after that conversation does want him.
Well, I was going to say
that kind of solidifies her position.
I don't remember honestly. Did it show him going through his day at the office after the party?
After the party,
yes.
But before their conversation? Before,
yes.
Okay,
yes.
So what do we see? The first girl he's examining is a freaking model with gorgeous breasts. She's a beautiful woman, and that's the first one he's looking at. But then it does also show him with Artie, you know, from up the block with his leg up in the air, and he's probably got his nuts hanging down. So I'm sure that's not beautiful.
Or whatever.
Yeah.
I think the structure of this movie also is very interesting. Like, very interesting.
Yeah.
It stands out, like, unique among a lot of movies. Like
The palindrome?
It's the climax of a movie takes place usually in the third act. But not in this one. In this one, it takes place in the middle of the second act.
Well, Shakespeare, the third act is the middle.
It's weird. It builds, like, the I see it as, like, almost like...
It's a palindrome.
To the top of a hill and then down again.
Yeah.
Just like a fantasy.
It's the same, like, scenes.
Yeah. And he goes, all these things that almost happened to him during the night unravel in the day in the exact opposite order.
But all movies that you watch end with a climax to take place at the end.
I don't know about that. I would argue this is kind of a tangent. Whoa! Kind of a tangent. I think Avengers climax is when the little ship collapses, not when they attack New York. I think that's more of the falling action. But that's just my thought. I don't know. Being an English teacher, I teach this on occasion, and we talk about it being a turning point in the story because it is a change, and it has to change the conflict, and it's the most significant change. And I think the most significant change in this film is that orgy.
Or
yeah,
it's Ziegler's. I mean, it's either that or it's the confrontation with Ziegler.
I think that's the.
Here's what actually.
But I think that's leading into your resolution. I think that's the turning point that goes back into the resolution. A lot of people confuse those two. The climax is literally and figuratively the orgy. And then the falling act turning into that resolution turning point is also when Ziegler tells him the truth about this secret society.
I think that also follows, like, when we were watching the movie and after the orgy, shortly after. After a couple of fellows in the room said, like, how much time do we have left? Because you feel like that is the moment
in a movie
where the ending is 20 minutes after.
It's a five-act structure. It's not a three-act structure. It's a little different.
It's like a bad third act, though. Because I want to say what's supposed to get you interested is the whole him investigate. Like, he's trying to go back and talk to the people that got him to the party. You know, and then those people are missing, and then there's people following him. It's like, I think that's supposed to kind of get you back on this, like...
Well, that's all falling out. That's all falling out. None of that is more intense with him when him getting in trouble.
Yeah,
you know, that
the mask on the bed, and to me, they left it vague. Like you said, Travis, was it somebody broke in and put the mask on there, or did she find it?
Yeah,
it
she
never
does
really
not mention
it.
It at all.
It doesn't explain
she's
it.
She's not, what
then,
the fuck is
and
this?
And
he's just,
he
I'll tell you whoever.
Right, and I'm immediately thinking, no, shut up.
Don't
shut
tell
up.
Anything.
Well, yeah, but him telling her everything puts her in the position that he was in immediately after she told him. Well,
yeah, and it might be the vulnerability and honesty she was looking for.
They were already told me we will take care of you and your family. So I don't want my wife to know anything about this. I'm keeping her out of it. Because the less she knows, the better.
Oversharing.
Oversharing. Yes. Yeah. The theme of the movie is
oversharing.
Lie
to your wives.
That's the Eyes Wide Shut.
There's white lies.
Yeah, I think we would be at a miss. I know we mentioned this, but I think we would be a little amiss if we forget to talk a little bit about the Illuminati, like the themes in that. I mean, we've got a couple minutes left.
Yeah.
I do think there's a strong case to be made that he's at least poking fun at the Illuminati or playing with it a little bit.
Fucking Stanley Kubrick. That means he's been one of the most influential filmmakers of the past, 40 fucking years? That means he rubbed elbows with the Illuminati.
Yeah,
period.
Or
just because or he's not in business.
He's joking with us, saying that they really exist when they really don't. Or depending on what theory you want to take.
His buddy at the fucking end, man, when Tom Cruise finds out that the whore that saved his life, and she's like, we're in danger, and they're like, you know, she's like, I'll whatever. What she say? She's like, I'll sacrifice myself. She didn't say that, but
yeah, I'll. Like, yeah, I'll and she. They find her overdose the next day.
Whatever. And then he finds out that for some reason in a newspaper there's but that's part of the supposedly if.
Xmas New York now hooker.
So he like tracks it pretty much back down. Yeah. Well, he does track it. Ziegler picks him up and he's like, dude, I know you fucking went to the hotel to try to find Nick. I know you, which he says, like, the guy had a bruise on his face and two big guys, scary guys. And he went to the morgue and seen the body of the dead hooker. So when he goes back to Ziegler, Ziegler calls him. Ziegler's like, dude, I was there. I was at the fuck party. Oh, he's got a red fucking pool table.
Oh my gosh,
art. So
I think all the balls were arranged in triangles. If you take any of the three balls, make triangles. Any of those three balls will make triangles.
Should I be like the way the Crimson Pope guy at the sex party introduced the women? I was like, oh, should I be following his foot pattern? You know, he did a 6-pointed star. So
8-pointed stars at the party. On the wall?
Is it 8? Yeah, I didn't count.
So that guy's just like, dude, you're fucking out of your mind coming to this party like that. Yeah. You are, you know, everybody showed up in limousines. You showed up in a taxi.
Yeah. and you got your rental receipt in your jacket pocket.
Yeah, dude, that was so funny. But then he starts, I like how he flips the switch. This is so real, so scary. He flips the switch. It's like, this was all a charade. Don't worry about it. Right. It's like, I think
I don't know if that was. I think he was just saying that.
I totally buy it.
No.
Yeah.
I buy what Ziegler was saying. He's like, look, we were just trying to freak you out because, but why? What's the motivation for the character?
Why'd they kill her? They did.
Well, the motivation for them to kill her is there. She said, I offer myself in a ritual kind of thing. We kill you.
Okay. Nick snitched.
What's the motivation for Ziegler to confess all this shit or to talk to Tom Cruise at all? Instead, why don't they
the greatest trick the devil ever did was make people think he didn't exist.
I think that's it's the same thing enough. With Scientology.
Why didn't they kill Tom Cruise? He can hold it over him.
Because you know you will never talk about
it. But that's not how he sets it up.
But he does set it up. He's like, the first half of the conversation, he's talking about how fucking dangerous the situation is. The second half, he's trying to ease it like, dude.
Right, yeah. But listen, I got a counterpoint to
hold on. Before your counterpoint, let me make my point.
Okay.
You can't counterpoint a point I even made.
Trying to say, first he's talking about how dangerous it is. Then the second half, I think he's just trying to ease his mind because, like, the point is like, dude, you have to forget this. That's all. So he's going to say whatever he can to his friend, like, dude, it was an act. The cops are happy. That's, to me, that's what fingers to me that it's not a charade. The fact that he says the cops are happy, you know, it's like, dude, that means like evident all the evidence
and he also says you know this would have like happened anyway because she was a junkie it would have happened anyway junkie, right? Not like
for the listeners you could also take that as it's like we've looked into this too and like the cops are happy so that's it.
Do you know what I take it as? We gave her a hot shot. That's right. What I take it as.
But the counterpoint being right that there like, Bill is already in that position where he's scared out of his fucking mind. He's gone, and he believes that, like, this woman stood up for him, got killed by this organization that has threatened his family, knows who he is, writes his fucking name on it. Like, Ziegler doesn't need to talk to him at all.
No, he's coming to him as a friend, dude.
Yeah, I think so. I think so.
He's the same.
Because he is his personal physician.
And he has no reason to even invite him to the Christmas parties. There's no, the logic for that friendship doesn't make sense.
He's the one that hasn't followed. As far as we know, I mean, yeah, I know they've been using red as his sexual whatever. As far as we know, the red pool table could mean he's the crimson guy. He could be the fucking main dude. Well, I think he's the Napoleon head guy. For sure. But it's just the idea that he's his friend.
I think the Hungarian might have been in the red, but I don't remember. I didn't pick up on the accent.
Because like one day,
I think it was the butler who delivered him the message. But
I think one day Bill could be there. If he fucking plays his cards right, Bill could be back there, totally invited to the elite party. He just needs to play his fucking
cards. I don't think so. He's so far below their class.
No, there's a difference.
He's a young doctor. Once he gets older,
like you said, there's a difference between the upper 1% and the upper 1% of the 1%.
You're just not in the club. That's not the family line.
All I know
is he's already invited to parties.
If we decide to crash an Illuminati sex party, we cannot take Colin with. That's all I'm saying.
And there is no second password.
There is no second password.
Remember that. No second password. What's the second password? Trick question.
Yeah.
So the movie winds down, and I guess it's almost time for us to do wrap-ups here, but it winds down with one of the best closing lines of a movie, I think, that like has ever been uttered, where basically they're trying to figure out, like, you know, is our marriage ruined? Or what should we do? And Bill basically confesses everything and leaves it up to Alice.
They said about how what happens one day in reality doesn't make up the total of your existence. And then one dream is not always just a dream. Yeah, one dream isn't always just a dream, but one day of reality isn't, you know. Well, that says a lot about marriage.
Like sometimes. Are we going to stick this through or are we not? I guess that was the question. Like, well, I guess we are because I'll let you finish the line there.
Yeah. Well, they've survived that long. I think that's what she says. It is kind of interesting that, like, I mean, that's basically like the arc, right? They've suffered through basically mental anguish of hearing.
This is first world problem shit. These people are not starving. They're not like,
right.
Are these our protagonists, but they're not really our heroes of this movie.
No,
right?
not at all.
Like, these people are not like,
they're not likable characters.
No, that's Kubrick in general, though. Yeah. I mean, let's be honest.
Characters. There really are just, that's instinctual thoughts.
Yeah, exactly. That's Kubrick's. Aside from maybe Spartacus.
Like Doctor Who. For Christ's sake, he's like showing it like a badge. It's like no one cares that you're a doctor.
Yeah,
that doesn't mean we're going to give you information about a person.
But they do.
I know.
Well, yeah, yeah.
He's obviously a doctor. But that's elite thing. I'm nothing but a fucking like dry cleaner. This guy's a doctor.
You're a doctor.
It's an elite. You're an authority, status, man. Yeah.
That's a Kubrick trait, though. Most of his characters, and that's one of the reasons I don't think why I enjoy him as much. Most of his characters do appear more like ideas than characters.
They're ideas and not characters. They don't actually have.
You're going to represent this.
I don't know anything about those people. This. Yeah. I hate Full Metal Jacket.
Yeah,
really?
And they're more.
I don't know anything about any of those people. I spend 3 hours with them
than they are characters.
They say
I think.
Mickey Mouse shit. That's what they say. Like I don't know anything about those people. What? Oh, there's that woman. I just don't like that movie.
All right. Well, Eyes Wide Shut does end with, I got to give you the line. He says to her, like, what do we have to do? She says, there's one important thing we have to do. And he says, what? And she says, we got to go home and fuck, basically. And that's the end of the movie.
Does she say we got to go home, or does she just say fuck?
Okay.
So it's like.
I don't like Nicole Kidman saying fuck. I don't know.
Because what's interesting about that is up until that moment, every time
she looks great in this movie.
When she's having sex with hundreds of guys, I was making love with this. We went home and we made love, blah, blah, blah. Every
well,
time
no, when she was drunk,
to it,
she was talking about fucking.
Oh, yeah. When she was on the pod, when she was laughing about it?
No, when she was on the pod at the beginning, she's like, fuck, she was being pretty. Well, like,
did you fuck those girls?
Which is different than the making love.
She was making love.
Yeah.
And in this specific occasion, she says, we got to go home and fuck. So I don't know if there's something you could read in there.
That men are dirty fuck beasts. And
well,
women are...
sometimes you need love. Sometimes you just need a good leg.
Either they have to go home and fuck because, like, Tom Cruise needs to have some kind of, you know, release after all of this shit that, you know, it's like...
Well, because let's face it. He spent $1,500 in two dead bodies and never got laid. The whole damn movie. It was ridiculous.
Yeah.
I said this movie would not exist if he would have just fucking jacked off in the first, like, 5 minutes. It would have been fine. You're like, oh, I'm glad that's over.
All right.
Well, I'm kind of worried about it.
Maybe we should do...
Igor?
Yeah, let's Igor.
Igor, are you here?
Masters, the mail. I've got the mail. So many letters. Our followers are rising.
All right, and thank you, Igor.
Get out of here.
So we've got a couple of comments tonight.
No, we got it, Igor.
This is like...
I was saying thank you. I'm thanking Igor.
All right, so we said basically that we would read anything that anybody writes.
Oh, that's a dangerous game. Let me guess. Hold on. I'm going to put this envelope to my head and say... Nick Hammond writes...
Well, first of all, Tom Keene.
Who the fuck is that guy?
I said, we're watching Eyes Wide Shut. He writes in...
Why?
Boobs!
Tom, I agree with you wholeheartedly.
Or boobs.
Boobs with multiple...
Boobs. Yeah, they were definitely wine glass.
That's how I identified that one character throughout the whole movie, was those
you,
boobs.
You did yeah. call it. The first time I had watched it, I had to wait until Ziggler
Her
revealed
had
it.
That one
but
scar
you
on
called
the
it.
Cheek.
Yeah.
I
can pick those out of a lineup. Nipples. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. Well, we do have a serious one from Nick Hammond.
This is too serious.
From Nick Hammond, you call
Nick.
It.
Nick Travis. Hammond.
I have never really been a fan of older movies. Wait.
Older? Wow, I feel old.
This is from 1999.
How old are you? Are you old enough to watch this movie?
Embrace it. I have.
It's rated R. You've got to at least be 17 or have your parent in the room.
Eyes Wide Shut?
Yeah, I've never really been a fan of older movies. This was made in your lifetime.
I'm sorry, did Nick just emasculate you or...
No, it didn't emasculate me. It's he's fucking.
I'm glad I'm older now because that's what Nicole Kidman was into.
I'm
older
sure
men.
Nick was not born in the year 2000. Nick, I'm shocked and appalled. I got to tell you, never been a fan of older movies.
But thanks for writing.
Older.
It was new when I saw it, and it was new when you could have seen.
Only
you just 300 didn't watch
up.
It. So that's what he said. He's like saying I didn't watch it when it was new, so I'm waiting, and now it's an older movie, right?
Right?
Yeah.
I hope. I mean, unless you've got like a following from a 14-year-old.
We're going to have to start editing these.
He would only catch them here and there or on TV sometimes. Is he still talking about... I can't tell, Nick. Are you talking about older movies?
We need to start screening.
It does look older with the lighting, but it's 1999.
Stanley Kubrick movies. Anyway, he says he's only seen Full Metal Jacket, Clockwork Orange,
Spartacus... He's talking about every fucking Stanley Kubrick movie.
Those are older movies.
Those are... You've got quite a few there.
His favorite was The Shining. So in the end, he would put Eyes Wide Shut at the end of that list because he feels the movie drags on and on and on in some spots.
Hmm. Yeah, it definitely does. Yeah, in a lot of spots.
All right. There's a lot of padding.
From the 6th minute to the 147th, whatever.
All right, Nick, then I may have misrepresented your comments because I'm not sure if you're talking about Stanley Kubrick movies or movies in general.
Yeah, and that's actually his most recent movie in a way.
Review of his idea of Stanley Kubrick movies.
Yeah,
like,
because
I don't like
Spartacus.
Older movies.
Which is
that's fine.
Which is his Eyes Wide Shut is Stanley Kubrick's newest movie.
It is his newest,
and it will always be his newest movie. Yes.
No, that was it. Okay, so wrap up.
We need to start screening.
Travis.
Okay, Eyes Wide Shut. It's a very boring movie. It's very, 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 very long and boring. No, I just don't like that. I hate Tom Cruise. I hate Nicole Kidman. This movie just has a lot against it going for me. I like the concept of this movie. I mean, I do. We sat here and we've thought about all the shit it's about, and it's very interesting to talk about. And it's very watching it is a fucking another story altogether. Watching it's like they won't spit the dialogue out. They're always saying, "Well, I
had a dream.
It's like, fuck, talk, talk. No one talks in this movie. Everybody
You like David Lynch movies?
What?
David Lynch movies?
I don't know. All right. I'll have to watch a David Lynch
movie. Similar delivery.
Lost Highway.
Yeah, it's just very, yeah, I don't get it. It's very overdramatic. Perfect. It's very over, like,
I'm doing that.
Like, I don't believe in, even in a reality, I don't believe in a, like, completely, like, no levity situation. Like, every situation has.
He's a Russian.
What?
The Russian.
The Russian?
He was fucking hilarious.
What are you talking about? Other movies during my fucking wrap-up of this movie?
No, is that
what
in this movie, the Russian.
The Russian in this movie.
That was funny. Yeah. I'm talking about the characters of Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman are boring people just to watch. I don't give a fuck about their characters because they're boring to watch, period. At least with Woody Allen.
I was going to say, you're the Woody Allen fan. Woody Allen characters.
No, they are not.
Get him a little snarky. Give him a little more clever dialogue. This is a Woody Allen movie. Believe where I was last night, huh? Oh, my gosh. There are people having sex on the table. Everybody.
They would actually have funny one-liners if this was a Woody Allen
movie. That's what I'm saying. You spark up the dialogue. It's a Woody Allen movie.
Any fucking one. That's what I'm saying. I watched this movie. I didn't watch a Woody Allen movie. I watched this movie. And I'm saying the characters are boring as fuck.
I want to see Woody Allen redo this.
So would I. It would be fucking fantastic.
That would be awesome.
Well, I'm sure he's already done this like a million times. I mean, this is his concept.
Because this could be, he could play the Tom Cruise character with Nicole Kidman again.
Let me finish my rap.
Sorry.
So I just don't fucking care for this fucking movie. I just don't. The pacing's horribly long. The lighting is okay. It's one of those, I like natural lighting, except why do natural light if you're gonna have this fucking ugly blue, the ugliest blue moonlight I've seen since, I don't even know, like the thing. I mean, it's probably the same blue moonlight as
the
thing.
It's a neon blue.
It's fucking really bright and horrible. It's horrible looking. Blue.
Girlfriend from Hell had better blue lighting.
This whole movie is blue and orange.
And untrue.
Probably about the same. I think it was the same guy that worked at Nudge. So I don't fucking care for this movie. I love what it's about. I love the concept. I love, I've liked our conversation about it. I've liked how we've even, like, uncovered more than what we saw in the movie in this conversation. But I just don't like the fucking movie. I just don't like it. Like what it's about. Horrible execution. Not horrible. Just, it's a Kubrick execution. It's just, like, very fucking artsy, somewhat beautiful, a little long for my taste, and the actors are boring. God damn it. So, yeah, fuck it. I don't recommend it. I wish I could. I don't. If you want some boobs, if you're here for Nicole Kidman was working on an Oscar for this movie because she showed her boobs throughout the whole thing. That's Oscar material. Oscar material. So, fuck this fucking movie. Yeah, Tom Cruise sucks.
How do you really feel about it?
Yeah, dude. I'm glad I saw it, though. This is the second time in my life I've seen it, though. So I'm glad I've had an adult.
What the? How could you?
Because it sucks.
An awesome conversation. I'm glad I saw it.
Because it's a good concept, but it's not
come
a good.
Come over to the dark side.
It's not fun to watch.
Watch it every
it's
Christmas.
Fun to talk about. It's not fun to watch. I judge a movie by when I go home by myself and be intrigued by watching this. The answer is fucking no.
Next time you watch it, you're going to see more shit.
I'm not even going to watch it the second time. This
it's
is
too
it.
Bad. You
I've should've. Watched this.
This was it.
No, I probably watched this in 1999, so I was like 16 when I saw this the first time. I was like, it's whatever it is. It's whatever. It's a movie. That was during my artsy like movie watching phase. That's when I discovered
you're over that now.
So I thought I was really artsy back then too. So when I was first watching artsy, I was like, I'm going to watch Stanley Kubrick. Yeah, fuck this. All right, moving on.
What can be said about Stanley Kubrick that hasn't been said a million times before? I do think the characters are ideas more than characters. It's almost like the Pilgrim's Progress of sexual escapade movies.
Holy shit.
As much as I respect him as a filmmaker, the only film of his that I've really enjoyed is Doctor Strangelove, which we've talked a little bit about. It is slow. This film is slow. And aside from the amazing ideas, the conversation that we have after the movie really is better than the film itself. There is no Kubrick has a hard time emoting. like, he has a hard time getting an audience to care about his characters. And that's where I think he struggles as a filmmaker, is because you're almost detached as an audience, so you can look at it from an intellectual standpoint. I think that's one of his strengths and weaknesses as a filmmaker, because he makes you think, not feel as much. I'm articulating what you're saying. And as much as I respect that, I wouldn't say it's entertaining. And I guess that would be why.
It's like, what do you want to do on Saturday night? You want to read an essay paper?
Yeah, exactly. And
what do you feel about Terrence Malick?
Yeah. I think A New World is one of the most amazing films of all time. Terrence Malick's amazing. I don't know what Terrence Malick does different than Kubrick, because I haven't done a side-by-side comparison, but it's an interesting idea. I respect the hell out of Terrence Malick. I really do. Kubrick, again, 2001. It's like, interesting intellectual exercise, but not entertaining. Where something like Interstellar, intellectual and entertaining, because I care about the characters. Mm-hmm. You know? That's, I guess, Kubrick. If you're into Kubrick, you'll like it. If you're kind of like me and you're like, Kubrick's a guy who you respect but not necessarily enjoy, then it's worth the watch.
All right. What can I say? I've dreaded it the whole week. I was not looking forward to this podcast. I will admit, I did make it through the whole movie, like I said, and I hadn't done that to this point.
Yeah.
I did see a lot of things that made me think, as an older married guy, that where you could really go wrong in your relationship.
Yeah.
Just the wrong conversation. So I did feel that. And I think he brought that point across.
Yeah. You did a bad, bad thing.
There were points where
you felt it, or you only thought.
No,
about
I felt it. I felt it. Because I'm thinking, man.
Oh.
At that point where you could have said the wrong thing. Or I've been to that point where, you know, somebody flirts with your wife or whatever. And it kind of, you know, you don't want to be a jealous idiot, but you can't help it a little bit. So, I mean, I think we all, especially as you get older and you're married and it gets comfortable, you know, you start to take things for granted. So I do get that point of it. I do like the, I call it obvious Illuminati references, because you can see certain things going on in the rituals and the colors and things like that. I did like the lighting throughout the movie, because it didn't feel, except for that blue light. Travis is right. That blue light's horrible, that moonlight. But everything else felt like natural light. It didn't feel like a Hollywood movie set, you know?
Yeah, it wasn't always halo lighting. I'm so sick of fucking halo lighting, because every movie's made with a green screen now. So everybody just throws this halo light now. It's just like, so there's just a fucking constant light in everybody's shoulders. It makes me so angry. Now that is theater lighting. It's no longer realistic. No, now it's theater.
He said deliberately, and I think he's done this in his past couple of movies, that, like, you know, we're not doing studio lighting, he called it. We're doing natural lighting.
Yeah.
He's done it since, I think, Barry Lyndon.
Barry Lyndon was his first soiree into candles.
And then the movie itself, like I said, it got off into different areas. I think it went into the emasculation of Tom Cruise by his wife. Whether she...
Which you think I would have enjoyed.
She meant to do it, but whether she did or didn't, she did it.
You're not a man. You're not jealous. You're not willing to fight for, you know, my...
Well, not only that, I would have gave you and our child away to go be with this guy for just one time. How emasculating is that? You know?
Cut my balls off.
Yeah, exactly. Rip them off like a couple of paper towels.
But hot never outweighs crazy.
Well, and she... yeah. I'm picturing that's got to be Nicole Kidman in real life.
Ouch. Well, that's a good performance then, right? Made you believe it.
Is it? It's realistic.
Because I'm thinking,
how do you know? That's what you don't know Nicole Kidman.
I'm making judgments.
We're allowed to do that. We don't have to be right.
Yeah, she's the one that put herself.
And if she comes here and proves me wrong, I'll be okay with that.
I will apologize. Yeah. If she shows up to the freak show, I will apologize.
Gladly.
But no, I just...
Hi, Nicole.
I do like, unlike a few of the other guys, I do like Tom Cruise in a lot of movies. I loved him in A Few Good Men, The Firm. I'm a Top Gun fan. I'm a Navy guy, so I do. I hate the volleyball scene, but I like the rest of
the volleyball scene. But, wow.
And I loved him in Legend. I'm always... That's one of my favorites.
Jerry Maguire.
Yeah.
That is one of my favorites.
Minority Report, War of the Worlds.
War of the Worlds.
No. Oh, my God. gosh. Oh.
What's wrong with that movie?
In it, but
what's right about that movie?
It's a Michael Bay movie made by Steven Spielberg.
Yeah, but it's entertaining as hell.
It is not entertaining at all.
It's better than the original.
He plays Steven.
Go back and watch it.
I'm going to put my foot
Yes, he does. The Outsiders is amazing. That's a fantastic film. Francis Ford Coppola, wonderful.
Stanley Kubrick, like I said, 2001, you know, of course, the main movies, I've seen them all. Full Metal Jacket and Shining are my two favorites. You know? But I don't know. The movie is like watching paint dry to me at points. It's just, it's like, come to a freaking point. I understand what you're trying to say, but say it a little quicker.
Yeah. You could have said that.
A little quicker. That's
you could have said that a half hour ago, buddy.
In real time.
But I do have to admit, I got more out of the movie this time than I ever have before, because I actually made it through the movie.
That's the thing about The Freak Show. It makes you watch something that you wouldn't normally watch. Right. Even you might pout through it, and even if you call it stupid later, you'll at least experience it. Well, and you're like, you can be vindicated to know, this is why I hate it. At least I know why. Right.
Now, as I'm saying, it has its boring points. It does. But if you're into how the wrong conversation can destroy a marriage, And it can be salvaged at the end, but what kind of a rabbit hole do you got to go down to get to that point? And then again, dealing with conspiracy theory and the power elite, which, you know, you and I talk about that all the time, Travis. But
don't say my name.
I'm sorry.
That wasn't Travis. That was Bill T.
What do you mean?
But
my name is Travis. Anyway, that's Barry. Damn, why are they both start with a B?
As a whole, I can't recommend the movie. But if you're into those kind of mental mind fields that you can go through in a marriage,
this is a mind fuck.
And exactly.
You know, I'm sorry. I gotta interject.
So it reminds me of a lot of like.
See the movie Sleep With Me with Eric Stoltz and Craig Schaefer. Same fucking
thing. Or Gone Girl, if the more recently. If you've seen that. I'm not going to give you any spoilers, but just kind of a nuts relationship that's not really healthy. And you know, how it kind of falls apart because they're both crazy.
Just say you're attracted to this other person could fucking just whoop.
Yeah.
What's in your mind? In your mind.
Yeah, but overall, I can't wholeheartedly recommend the movie, but there are parts to it that are good. Better than what I thought.
Nicole Kidman's movie. Well, two parts?
Yeah. Well, no.
Two parts?
The right bro.
Nicole Kidman is the best. It was the girl that I identified. But,
her ass is fine.
But like I said, it's a movie that if you're into those kind of things, it's great. It's just a little long-winded.
For sure.
Yeah, they could have cut a lot of fat. I mean, they didn't even have to cut lines.
I don't hate it, but I wouldn't seek it out.
I could make a 45-minute episode out of it.
So.
Well, all right. So I picked this movie. So here we go. First of all, like, it's interesting, like, talking about it. It's like the first part has to be like a rebuttal, right? Oh.
I have to defend myself, damn it.
Yeah, it's all right.
Because that's what it feels like. I got three guys saying they hate it.
No, I got you.
But here you go.
You're covered.
Like, earlier tonight, we were talking about Peter Jackson and how, like, I fucking can't stand these goddamn Hobbit movies because he has to give every single person a backstory. There's too many characters. It's like, just simplify the fucking thing and tell me, like, what is the essentials of the story in order to progress through this narrative so I can get to the end. The Hobbit should be 3 hours, not, what are we
at? Nine.
It's nine, right? So then the irony is that we come to a Stanley Kubrick movie that's like 2.5 hours long.
Oh, what's the janitor do?
But it is... Instead of having too many characters, it only has, like, what, four characters that I could be wrong?
Well, I would say that's fine.
Well, no, he runs into a lot of secondary characters.
But they don't all have their own moment backstory.
But they don't have the backstory. Like the Russian
we only encounter them from Dr. Bill's perspective. And that is the entire movie, actually.
For sure.
And that's why it would be interesting. Maybe Chris suggested at one point we should have a female perspective for this movie, because you're right. Because this movie is from the male perspective.
Well, but it's from
Dr. Cooper's male. I mean, come on.
Well, really, Nicole Kidman's almost barely in the movie, really.
Right. She is the ideal that Dr. Bill has of...
Of trophy wife.
Of woman. Of wife.
Right? Woman.
Of mother, wife, and woman.
don't forget whore. But
and whore. So that's one. I don't find the pacing of this movie. It's never turned me off to it. Ever since I saw it in the theater, I've always been entranced by it, and I think that's has something to do with the way that it's paced and the way that it's edited. You know, the dissolves I think have something to do with it. It does. Kubrick's movies seem to get you in some like really weird. It's like it's not. It's like a subconscious kind of headset. I'm sorry, mindset. No, right?
Totally I did feel that a little bit.
It's well, a trance.
And you were saying earlier, like Travis, you were saying that you know it's like this movie is a mind fuck. It's like it plays with your mind. But like I think that that to me refutes the criticism that like. His movies are an intellectual exercise, right? I mean, like,
dang,
they are.
Shoot me down.
Just to me. I mean, because, I love this stuff. And I don't know why. And I'm trying to articulate it as best I can. But it's one of those things that you just feel. But it's like you watch the thing and it's like every time that I watch this, right? Like you guys have said, like, I've watched it tonight and I see something different. Every time I watch this, I see something different. This is one of the great markers in my mind of what is art.
Are you thinking something different? I mean, I'm sorry, are you just thinking something different? Or seeing something different?
There's a lot in there.
I mean,
there's no doubt about that.
I have a theory.
It's very layered.
Yeah, I think it's very layered. It's very open to interpretation, which is why all these people can look at it and see completely fucking different things that are like, and that's why I think Kubrick is attributed as a genius. I don't know that he's a genius as a filmmaker. As a filmmaker, yeah, I think he leaves so much stuff open that you can interpret it. He blanches out the screenwriter said, like, he put all this detail in about who Dr. Bill was, and Kubrick blanched.
Let's make him anybody.
Everybody. And yeah. I think that, like, the screenwriter's frustrated because he's like, I'm trying to fucking write a character, and you're taking all the character out of it.
Yeah, that's the intellectual exercise.
It's the visualist versus
he is now the everyman.
I can project all of my shit onto this guy, and he can become anything for anybody everywhere, and anybody can read into it.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And now I forgot where I was going with this. I'm sorry.
You're saying it's not just an intellectual exercise.
Well, I think
it's more. Than I said just I was.
It's
deeper. Kubrick.
I was catching Kubrick. You said.
I'll call us as Kubrick.
Kubrick. Yeah.
Kubrick.
The closest thing I saw to this year was a movie called Under the Skin with Scarlett Johansson. It had the same kind of tone and feeling to it.
A slap on the head.
But it's like, I appreciate that, even though there's like, you can identify it. Even Under the Skin feels to me Kubrickian.
Wow. He's now an adjective.
Lovecraftian Spielbergian.
Is that just entertaining and with the family involved? That's all it is. It's got an alien and a family.
But you know what I'm saying. When I say Spielbergian.
And really bright windows.
I do know that.
That's Spielberg,
right?
At least early Spielberg.
Kubrickian. I think you know the feel of that.
Dude, it's that slow fucking. There's a slow.
Kubrick is always a slow burn.
I mean, that's. Yeah.
He's always a slow burn.
2001 is my favorite because there's that
Kubrick's movies are crockpot cooking.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
They're built.
Yes. But sometimes the stew just doesn't taste good.
I like the way that I can keep watching these things like every year. Like I said, I watch Eyes Wide Shut. Sometime in February or January, I watch The Shining. And eventually sometime I watch Barry Lyndon. Those are my three.
You like Barry Lyndon? I've never seen it.
Yeah.
Me either.
I don't know. You'll hate it, I think. Well, probably.
I like Strange Love. I like Clockwork. There's a lot I like by him. There's just a lot I don't like.
It's
by
the
him.
Slowest movie that he's
Clockwork
made,
isn't that slow.
That
if I remember, I've been a long time.
Clockwork, I think moves.
I think
it's slow, but I think it still moves compared to this.
This one is like, yeah. I'm going to wait 30 seconds before I give my line because it's dramatic. How are you, Bill?
I think that it contributes. I think that's a part of an overall design that contributes to that dream, like
the meditation that even the Hungarian does to Nicole Kidman might be an element of that, and it might be cinema verite.
Like a snake charmer with her. He's just that tone.
Yeah,
he has
absolutely.
Because he's aware, elite people. He's aware of the power he has.
Look into my eyes.
Have you seen his Renaissance sculpt? Collection.
Well, that's where he's gonna fuck her, man.
Yeah.
Oh, I know where we can go. Yep,
that's where we're gonna go.
Alone together.
He's upstairs with the models, and we're gonna go see his sculpture gallery.
It's Roy.
That's why, you know. Aside, he was like, he's got like this series of Renaissance bronzes. Do you really love the period? And she's like, yeah. And I'm like, I'm sitting there going like, and this is how you're reading into characters. Anybody can read whatever. I sit there and go like, she doesn't know what the fuck he's talking.
But she's an art dealer. She should.
She does. When I see it.
I see her like, incredibly turned on. Yeah. And
he's smooth.
Yeah. And he's like, yeah, let's do that. My breath just turned into Marilyn Monroe.
But that's the thing about Kubrick, right? He's giving so little information that you're reading your own personal stuff. That's why I asked Chris, what do you think about Terrence Malick? Terrence Malick is the same way to me. He is more emotional than Kubrick, I think, in his...
Maybe his stories are more believable to me. I don't know.
Well, he's going after a different thing. I think Kubrick's going, right? Kubrick goes after the idea.
Malick did Badlands.
Badlands, New World, Thin Red Line.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, but he goes after a different thing, and I think that it's, you know, but he does it in a similar way that you project a lot onto it, and you have time to.
Yeah.
And it's your sick fantasies. You're the pervert.
Yeah, exactly.
Not Tom Cruise, it's you.
And you want to make love to medieval masked people in
high heels. I'm on my way to a fucking masked orgy right now. I don't know what you guys are doing after this.
And it's a lot more exciting. I was going to go to
McDonald's. What's the password? Tell me the password, please.
I've got my long Mr. Punch nose fucking mask, and I got my my cloak with hood.
Well, my tuxedo. And you're good to go. Oh,
don't go in a taxi, though.
I want to go to one of those so bad.
All right. Well, wait,
I'm sorry.
Get out of this. I've forgotten most of my points.
Oh, I'm sorry
about that. But I love this movie. Like I said, I love it. I watch it every fucking year. I think
sick.
You should
Christmas
too.
Christmas movie. Sick.
Yeah, I know.
That is his favorite Christmas like movie, ladies and gentlemen.
I'm a horror. I'm a
nothing
horror
says Christmas like Illuminati
and this
orgy.
Movie is creepy as hell. Creepy. I think the yeah, to me it plays as creepy, sinister. And there's just like the music.
The music's awesome.
Was
it really
Ligeti
is.
Or whatever?
Yeah, like, the single note. Ding, ding,
dude,
it
was like
ding.
Dude, like following him around. It's like, this is just, Kubrick's movies are always creepy. I think that's maybe why I like him over Woody Allen. I think Woody Allen is a great humanist, but Kubrick is somehow like a he's like a computer making movies. He's a sociopath making movies.
I was going to actually say that. I think he's the Spock of film directors. I really do. He's trying to understand human emotion because
by making
he just can't emulate it.
Yeah, no, I believe that. But the other thing that we talk about, like, you know, filmmakers that we admire, envy, or whatever, it's like, I like, you know, Dario Argento, John Carpenter, and like Stanley Kubrick, maybe like in that order or maybe not, but yeah, he's in my top three, I think.
Wow.
And I sit there and go like, now do I envy him as a, or you know, like, do I admire him as a director? Because as a director, I almost think that Stanley Kubrick is lazy as hell. Right? Like, you should go into it knowing what the hell you're trying to get out of the scene.
But
and he goes into it and goes,
too many
like,
options.
Let's try and find out all the options.
Just like
for a
the
meticulous
elite.
Filmmaker.
We want
you
the
know,
best of the best.
For some guy who we, I don't know if we said, this movie was filmed completely on a back lot in England because it's set in New York. He didn't want to come to New York. He's afraid of flying
around. I'm lazy.
He just likes the control.
The Illuminati will kill me for all the movies I've made about them.
I'll tell you about the according to the screenwriter about the orgy sequence, right?
Yes, tell
there's
me more.
There's a story. In the novel...
Tell me a bedtime.
Tell
hold
me
on,
more.
Fridolin goes to a masked
Fridolin.
Ball.
He makes
in
Tom
the novel.
Cruise.
Right. Goes to the masked ball.
The Bill character.
And the
Harrison
Bill character.
Ford Land.
And there is there's a bunch
Harlan?
Of... Basically, as
Harford?
Described in this 1920s novel...
Was written in the 20s?
Yeah. Great. It's basic in Freud times.
Freudians.
When Freudian psychology.
Fuck your mother. That's what every guy wants to do. I get it.
So it's basically like ballroom dancing with naked ladies.
Oh, well, that's what I do.
And Kubrick's like, we have to update this somehow. We got to make this new. Like, what can you do to make
we got
to
do ballroom dancing with naked ladies.
He was like so exact that he said, you know, like, how much does this character make? How much does this apartment cost? How much, you know, it's like, you needed to know all this. It's like, why do you need to know all this shit when you're making a fucking movie that's set in this, damn he it. Somehow had to have in order to
everybody needs
it,
to see Birdman.
Like, here's why this exists.
I do want
to
see that.
So he would send this guy Frederick Raphael, the screenwriter, like pictures of Helmut Newton, photos of naked women in high heels and thongs, blah blah blah, and said like, "What can we do? What can we do?" And Frederick Raphael faxed Stanley Kubrick a document, and the document was about an organization called the Free that was created in the aftermath of the John F. Kennedy
assassination. You just brought this up now. We're at the end of the fucking. fucking pocket. Yeah. Well, you're just now bringing up
this. I didn't have a fucking conclusion. Chance to talk earlier, so let me do it.
You
so,
didn't have a chance.
Anyway, this was an organization that formed, and like sex was the ultimate like expression of their freedom, and somehow, and they hired plumbers, which was the names of the people who had plugged the leaks.
I bet they did.
In the secret organization. He faxes this to Stanley Kubrick, and he says, this is what... This is the thing behind the orgy. This is who the people are. And Stanley Kubrick goes, where in the fuck did you get this document? Like, are we on some kind of, like, legal thing here where we're like, you know, this is going to be, like, an issue for us? And Frederick Raphael was like, dude, I made this whole thing up. This is what a writer does. The writer fucking creates things out of his own mind.
It's always influenced by someone else, though.
Based on something heard, yeah.
No, he made it up.
Every myth has its
dreams. I can't
believe that up.
He dreamed it. According to him, he dreamed it up because Stanley Kubrick was like, give me a reason why. Give me a reason why. Give me a reason why. And he's like, this. And Kubrick's like, where'd you get that? Holy shit. Is this, like, going to incriminate us somehow? And he's like, we made it up, dude.
Think like, all the
I thought the Rothschilds
like not even, the, it's not
had a
in the
masquerade
movie.
Party,
it's
and that was
in the movie. But it was justification for Kubrick to be able to do the scene.
I can understand
this is
that
who
though.
These people are
I understand that though.
Okay, so cool. Not really in his mind something real, but.
Yeah, so
sorry.
We should stop. So
sorry.
We're talking too much. We just brought, like, maybe you should
have. By the time you're done with this podcast, you could have watched it.
So, what are we watching next week?
We're going to be watching a movie I've been trying to get on the podcast for quite some time. It might take you a while to go find it, so please go find it before we watch it. It is a Korean movie.
Woo-hoo!
Called Save the Green Planet. And it's fantastic. It's one of my favorite movies from the past few years. It's kind of, it's like, it's drama, but hinges on sci-fi. It's kind of both. It's kind of torture, horror, drama, whoa, sci-fi. What?
It sounds like Saturday Night Freak Show material.
It's definitely Saturday Night Freak Show material.
All right, so that's next week on the Saturday Night Freak Show. And until then, you can find us on Stitcher Radio, iTunes.
You recommended it?
What? Yeah, so I definitely recommended it, didn't I?
Yeah, I think so.
Yes, you did.
So Saturday Night,
Stitcher, Podbay, TuneIn, Pod, Player FM, and more. And until then, we'll be deep in alcohol drinking and
amongst
intoxicating
other things.
And until next week, that's it. The basement is closed.
Holy shit.